Music is from an old Cuban folk song, Una Canción de la Trova. And since I can't play the guitar and read the translation at the same time, maybe I'll read the translation first. I am a truthful man from the land where the palms grow. Before I die, I want to share these poems of my soul. My verse is clear green, it is flaming crimson. My verse is a wounded fawn seeking refuge in the hills. With the poor people of this earth, I want to cast my lot. The cool stream of the mountains pleases me more than the sea. So everybody sing along, please. And come a little closer, too. We don't have to all hide back there in the wings. I mean, you're not in the shade anyway, so you might as well gather around. So sing along. Guantanamera. Oh, let me get the note right. Guantanamera. Ooh. Hold on one second here. There we go, here we go. Volume up a little bit? Can you do that?
Yeah, a little up.
Is that possible, Steve?
See everything but a volume.
It's kind of... I'll just try and sing loud. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. Yo soy un hombre sincero. Oh yeah, there we go. Yo soy un hombre sincero. De donde crece la palma. Yo soy un hombre sincero. De donde crece la palma. I just learned this yesterday. Y antes de morir me quiero echar mis versos de alma. Well, what's that?
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
I'll keep it going for you. I sing this professionally.
Oh, you did? Nice. Go for it. Guantanamera. Ooh, I just broke a string.
Guajira, Guantanamera. Guantanamera. Guajira, Guantanamera. Mis versos son verde puro y de un carmín encendido. Mis versos son verde claro y de un carmín encendido. Mi ángel son un ciervo herido que busca en el monte amparo. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. Guantanamera. Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. Con los pies de la tierra, suerte echar. Con los pobres de la tierra, y yo de la sierra me compré más que el mar. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera. Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera, Guantanamera, Guajira, Guantanamera.
Thanks. You're great.
That was an amazing group effort. That was just fantastic. Folks, it's important on days like today that we remember that we are in an international struggle. The struggle is going on in many places in the world, most notably today in Genoa. Many of our sisters and brothers are fighting the forces of greed and exploitation on our behalf. I'm sorry to report that one of the soldiers in that struggle was shot and killed yesterday by a policeman's bullet. He was a 23-year-old Italian named Carlo Giuliani. I think it's important that we take a moment of silence in honor of our fallen brother. Thank you. Clap with me. Welcome to this rally in Monument Square, Portland, Maine. Let Cuba live. We are here today to celebrate and to express outrage at the seizure and theft of humanitarian and medical supplies on their way to Cuba via the port of Montreal on July the 2nd. We have many people here today. I hope that you'll welcome them with me. First of all, I want to welcome John Gilbert from the Italian Labor Federation to say a couple of words. John?
Just a few words to say that I'm very sorry that I'm not in Genoa today. This is the flag of my union, the Italian Confederation of Labor, over 5 million members, and a lot of my union buddies are in Genoa for these 3 days of demonstrations against capitalist globalization. And they were kind of ribbing me because I left to come back. I'm originally from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And I said, well, I guess there's a demonstration in Portland. So while you're in Genoa, we'll be in Portland demonstrating for Cuba. And so we say, and the official position of our union is that this embargo is a criminal and an immoral embargo. U.S. hands off the Cuban people, in defense of the Cuban people and the revolution.
Thanks, John. That was great. Michael Walsh from the Association Québécois des Amis de Cuba.
Thank you, and welcome to this special Solidarity Day. Excuse my English. Thanks a lot for the invitation to speak as a member of l'Association Québécoise des Amis de Cuba and the Caravane d'Amitié Québec-Cuba. As it was on July 2nd at Coburn Gore, today it's a great day of solidarity, an important moment in the struggle against the blockade of Cuba. Also, it's a shameful day for the government of the United States with the seizure of medicine supplies for the Cuban people. The most important mission of our association in Quebec is to let people know the Cuban reality
and show how it is immoral and criminal for the USA to maintain this embargo. We want also teach in Quebec and in the world to the people the importance to support the Cuban Revolution and its great realizations. We have to tell him that Cuba is an example for the other people, and many of them are waiting for a leader against U.S. empire. But everybody knows that Cuba alone, without solidarity, without people like you this afternoon, cannot survive and play its historic leading part. It is why we are here today, and like since 1993, we participate with Pastor for Peace and Let Cuba Live at those Friendshipmen caravan. Cuban leaders always say that they have to fight in a battle of ideas, especially since the kidnapping of Elian Gonzalez. With this new seizure of Friendshipmen, one more time, U.S. government show how ridiculous is the policy used to please to the mafia of Miami and their supporters. Viva Cuba, viva Fidel, venceremos!
Wow, that was our international flag. Great job, Michael. Do we have someone from International Action Center? Come on up if you're here.
In traffic.
Okay. Nalda Figisi? Hi. Sorry, you're coming up a little early. Nalda is a coordinator of the U.S.-Cuba Labor Exchange, which is a group that encourages dialogue between Cuban and U.S. workers. She will be here to talk about a different element of U.S. policy toward Cuba, that of denying people-to-people visas. Nalda?
Thank you, and good afternoon, brothers and sisters. It's really an honor to be here today and to represent the U.S.-Cuba Labor Exchange and also five members of the Cuban Federation of Trade Unions who are unable to be here today because the U.S. State Department denied their visas. Their visa request was to travel first to their sister island, Puerto Rico. And I think we all know what's happening there. The visas were denied at the last minute. They were to participate in a nationwide month-long tour of 30 cities from the north to the south of the United States, from the east to the west. Among the groups that they would have met with were the Charleston Five, trade unionists in South Carolina, members of the predominantly black Longshoremen's Workers Association, who were subject to police intimidation and provocation and now are being prosecuted for that. They also would have met with a variety of union officials and, more importantly, average working people in the United States. And these are people who have no opportunity, due to a variety of reasons, not the least of which financial, to travel to Cuba. And this is an opportunity that has been denied for free association, for the right to hear and to exchange ideas about the reality for Cuban workers and for U.S. workers, and is truly a learning experience for working people in both countries. And this is why the United States government has denied. What I urge you to do today, and there are many people who will be urging you to do things, is to sign letters to the State Department protesting this denial of the visas. I have letters with me today. Please see me. I'll be happy to share them with you. And send these letters, give them to me, and we will mail them. And once again, we cannot be silent for these intimidation, for these violations, for this gross, horrible, inhumane U.S. policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Nelda. It is time that the illegal, immoral blockade of the nation of Cuba be lifted. It is time to let Cuba live. It is time to engage with the nation of Cuba in a constructive dialogue and let Cuba live. Certainly they've survived well on their own. But dialogue between U.S. workers and Cuban workers will help to, I need your help here, let Cuba live. It's time for our medical supplies to be released by the U.S. government and be transferred to Canada where they can be shipped to Cuba where they belong so that we can let Cuba live. Let Cuba live. Let Cuba live. Let Cuba live. Venceremos. It's my pleasure to introduce to you State Representative Michael Quint, a man who is well known statewide for his advocacy for youth at risk and also for the rights of working men and women and their families everywhere. Michael?
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for coming. And I want to thank each and every one of you for being here today. This is a very important thing that's happening, and it's a movement that I'm proud to say was spurred by a confrontation on the Canadian border. I'm from Aroostook County, and I've participated in and seen lots of confrontations at the New Brunswick border, and Maine is always a place that has that struggle and supports people who do that. We're here today to say enough. Enough of needless pain and suffering that this embargo causes countless men and women and children who live in a country that has never attacked or invaded the United States. We are here to say enough of the utter insanity that makes it a felony for U.S. citizens to ship medical supplies and equipment from Maine to people who desperately need them in nearby third world country. There are so many things that we do not make sense, that does not make sense about this embargo that has been in place for 40 years. We, the largest economic power in the world, are engaging in what amounts to an economic warfare against a country that has about the same land mass as the state of Maine. And for what? It is time that we all started asking some tough questions about the way our nation treats Cuba, as opposed to the way it treats other countries with whom we do not always agree. For instance, why do we reward China with the most favored nation trading status when its business tycoons undercut American wages with slave and prison labor and then exclude Cuba from any negotiations that concern global trade or labor standards? Why is it that the United States foreign policy towards China is decided by principles of free trade and constructive engagement, but U.S. foreign policy towards Cuba is decided by an outdated and destructive mentality of Cold War isolationism. It is time for the embargo to go. It is time to end the needless and inhumane economic war against a society that has never waged war against us. I want to commend Senator Susan Collins, along with Congressman John Baldacci, and Tom Allen, who have signed on to the Bridges with Community Act, and to relax the restrictions on trade with the nation of Cuba. I call on our last congressional senator, Olympia Snow, to join the rest of Maine's congressional delegation in support of this piece of legislation. Let me say again, thank you for coming. I am proud to stand with you in the principles of humanity, civility, and truth. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Great support. Avi Chomsky was supposed to be here. She may show up yet, and she certainly sends her support, and we're all very grateful for all the great Cuba research that she's done and hope to see her later on. But right now, I'd like to bring up Ellen Bernstein from Pastors for Peace, Interreligious Foundation for Community Organizing. Here she is.
Hello, hello. It's so good to be here with you today. Driving up from southern parts of the world, from the New York area, I was reminded of all the energy that's gone into all the traveling that so many people have done from so many parts of the U.S. to make a statement about Cuba, to spread the word about Cuba, to try to send aid to Cuba. You all need to know that there are people in all parts of the United States and all parts of the world who are watching what you're doing here today, who are watching what this struggle has been to send this medical equipment to Cuba, who are watching and who are applauding you for your bravery, for your vision, for your hard work, and who are saying, that's right, of course we should be able to send aid to Cuba. Of course we should be able to trade with Cuba. Of course it's time to lift the blockade of Cuba. I've been asked by a member of Let Cuba Live to read one of the solidarity letters that's come in internationally for the work that's going on here. And this letter comes from the Cuba Solidarity Campaign of the United Kingdom. Let me read it to you. It says, Dear Let Cuba Live, please be assured that the Cuba Solidarity Campaign in the UK is solidly behind you in your just endeavors to highlight and defeat the cruel, inhuman, and illegal blockade of Cuba by the United States. On this, your day of protest, July 21, we send you our support. The Cuba Solidarity Campaign has more than 3,000 members and affiliates, including the direct affiliation of 28 national trade unions representing more than 6 million workers in the United Kingdom and Ireland. On behalf of them all, we send you our solidarity and know, as the Cubans say, venceremos, which means we shall overcome. We're going to win. The road to victory is long, but we shall prevail. Below is the open letter of protest to George W. Bush we sent out around the world on hearing the news of the events in Maine on July 2nd. This letter is dated July 4. A little closer to the mic. Good. This letter is dated July 4, and it says, Dear President Bush, on this, your nation's Independence Day, in which you celebrate your forebears' victory over British colonial rule, it is indeed ironic that we in the United Kingdom's Cuba Solidarity Campaign are writing to protest at the continuing colonialist policy that your government follows toward Cuba, your tiny neighbor to the south. It has been brought to our attention that two members of the Maine-based organization Let Cuba Live, in a joint project with the Caravane d'Amitié Québec-Cuba, the Québec-Cuba Friendship Association, and IFCO Pastors for Peace, were arrested on July 2nd as they attempted to take four trucks loaded with medical equipment worth $250,000 into Canada for shipment to Cuba. Those arrests happened when the activists were stopped and two of their trucks were impounded and when they attempted to carry the aid across the border by hand. The United Kingdom's Cuba Solidarity Campaign has more than 3,000 members, the affiliation of 28 national trade unions, who represent some 6 million working people in the United Kingdom, and the support of 40 members of Parliament and members of the European Parliament. Our campaign is pledged to oppose your government's policy of blockading Cuba and to defending the right of the Cuban people to sovereignty and independence. We say, number one, the medical aid that was confiscated on the Canadian border is urgently needed and should be allowed to cross the border into Quebec and onto Cuba. The participants and their vehicles should be released, number two, and number three, the brutal blockade of Cuba must end. Yours, and it's signed Ken Gill, chairperson, and Dr. Stephen Wilkinson, national coordinator of the Cuba Solidarity Campaign in the United Kingdom. Yeah. Now, we want you to know that that's just one of many letters that have been coming in internationally and from all parts of the United States. What's significant about that, one of the things that's significant about that, for us, from IFCO Pastors for Peace, for all of us who've been working in Cuba Solidarity for so many years, is we remember that just even 5 years ago, when we were fighting to get those computers to Cuba, some of you remember that campaign, a lot of people said to us, don't even try this now. No one in Washington is going to want to talk with you about Cuba. What do people in Michigan or Maine care about Cuba? And you need to know that just 5 years from then till now, look at the difference. Look at the difference. Look at how people all over the country are rising up, are making their voices heard, are challenging the laws, are working even more strongly every day to challenge the blockade until it ends. And look at how now we know that even the majority of the Congress of the United States is ready for a change in this policy. If it weren't for the dirty tricks of the folk in Miami and thereabouts, if it weren't for the dirty tricks of the folk who live in the state where the president's brother happens to be the governor, and to whom they say he may owe his election, if it weren't for those dirty tricks in the Congress last year, we would already have seen a law that would have made it possible to send this aid to Cuba. The majority of the Congress supported it, and they said it was undemocratic when the law didn't pass. So we got to keep working, and that's why it's so important that you all are getting your members of Congress on board, you're getting your senators on board, you're getting the word out to the media, because what we're finding is that the more people learn about this issue of the blockade of Cuba, the more people say, well, of course you should be able to send medical equipment to Cuba. Of course we should be trading with Cuba. Of course we should be exchanging with Cuba. Of course we should end the blockade. What I want to do now is to give the word, as they say in Cuba, dar la palabra, to give the floor to a man who has been a real important figure in this movement. He has put his life on the line, literally, along with other friends of ours in this network, as some of you know, in order to stand up and say this policy is immoral, this blockade of Cuba is immoral, Cuba is not a threat, Cuba is not an enemy. We need to love our neighbors and end the blockade. So the man I'm introducing now is the director of IFCO Pastors for Peace, the founder of this whole project that's taken caravans to Cuba to challenge the blockade, and the man to whom we look as an example of how this work needs to be done. This is the Reverend Lucius Walker.
I bring congratulations and greetings from all of us, the total national network of IFCO, Pastors for Peace. We've received messages from so many of the solidarity organizations and states and major cities around the country expressing deep appreciation and support for the wonderful, wonderful leadership that the Maine Let Cuba Live Coalition, in concert with the Quebec-Cuba Friendship Association, are giving, attacking this cruel blockade on the northern border. You are really not alone. The whole world is watching not only what the U.S. does with dismay and with disgust, but it is watching what you do and taking heart from what you do, being encouraged by the work that all of you here gathered today represents, especially those who took the initiative and the leadership to organize the crossing into Canada on the 4th of July. I received just this week a phone call, both phone calls from Germany and from Steve Wilkerson, who was party to the statement Ellen just read. I don't know that you can really understand how deeply moved people around the world, and certainly people in the United States, are because of the actions you have taken. Let me try to put that in context just a little bit. The United States government knows that if it will pacify some of those who are opposed to the blockade, if it can divide our forces, if it can encourage especially organizations that are within the solidarity community, people who oppose the blockade and who stand in solidarity with Cuba, if it can trickle down a few licenses to those organizations, then it's successful in that it has created legitimizing exceptions to the ongoing, vicious, cruel policy of blockade. What does that mean? It means that while our government prevents normal relations with Cuba, and while it does not allow U.S. corporations to purchase products that are produced in Cuba, while it does not allow Cuba to buy from the more natural markets just up the Gulf of Mexico, rice, pharmaceuticals, and other products that are created here, while on this large scale it is preventing food and medicine and medical equipment from getting to Cuba, if here and there there are a few people, and especially people who are in our ranks, who will accept a license and take a small amount of aid, then our government PRs that and says, there really is no blockade of Cuba. We really allow sales and trade with Cuba. And they will give figures. They will talk about the number and the value of that aid. And how does it arrive at that number? It arrives by adding the aid donated under licenses, and it will claim credit for those legitimizing exceptions. It's a trick. They know it's a trick. And the person who wrote that tenet in the law himself called it track two. But it's not an equal track as we think of when we think of a train on a track. There is some little sliver that holds a weak wheel, and then there is this huge track that holds the big wheel, and that big wheel is the hammer. It is the effort by the U.S. to prevent Cuba's access to the things that are necessary for normal life. And it places rather the emphasis on these few legitimizing exceptions. Therefore, it is extremely important that organizations like Let Cuba Live will take a stand as you have taken and say, we will not be complicit. We will not allow our government to use us to be the legitimizing exception for a genocidal policy against the people who are not our enemies, indeed, who have proven time and time again that they are our friends. And what you, Let Cuba Live, is doing here on this northern border is setting a standard. And Pastors for Peace is honored and delighted to walk that path with you, to be here with you, to tell the world what you're doing, to promote your work, your solidarity, as an example of what all solidarity organizations, all church groups, all educational groups, all labor groups, all people of goodwill in the United States ought to be doing. And that is challenge the blockade. That is going across the border. Make no mistake about it, what you are doing, what you did on the 4th of July, and the continuing action that you've been engaged in, exposes the utter sham. It exposes the contradiction. It exposes the cruelty of our government's blockade against Cuba. And it needs to be exposed. We need to pull the cover off of it. They are feeling embarrassed right now. Why wouldn't they feel embarrassed? I mean, after all, they didn't seize missiles or even guns. They didn't seize anything that would threaten the security of the United States. Now, from what I understand, Tom, Peter, Judy, they've been telling us, I assume they're telling the truth. They said that what you were taking across the border were an incubator for babies. Well, tell me how that threatens the security of the United States. A defibrillator or defibrillators to resuscitate, to give life. How in the name of God does that threaten the security of the strongest nation in the world? It is not just a contradiction, it is absolutely, well, if it weren't so serious, it would be silly. Let me give you an example. I thought about this on the plane this morning, of what this policy is like. A couple of years ago, I was driving through the city of New York, and I observed three police cars, and they had surrounded a shopping cart from the grocery store. And there was a person of obvious Latino descent. The cart was full of bouquets of flowers. Now, there are a lot of people from Mexico and from other places in Central America who are undocumented, who can't get regular jobs, or if they get jobs, their labor is exploited. And they sell flowers for $5 a bunch to make money to send back to their families in Mexico and Nicaragua and El Salvador. Three police cars. This was in Harlem. I know the area. I know that drugs were being sold around the corner. I know that drug pushers were dealing near the schoolhouse around the other corner. I know the area. Three police cars surrounded one little cart, and I stopped and I looked, and I literally saw these big, burly policemen break the bouquets of flowers and throw them in one of these big black garbage bags. And I couldn't take it. So I backed up to get as close as I can. And I said, "Hey!" Got their attention. Said, "What in the name of God are you doing? These poor folk are not hurting anybody. They're trying to raise a little money to support their families. There are drug dealers less than a block away from here. Go arrest some drug dealers. He said to me, if you don't get out of here, we're going to arrest you. No shame. I said, when you go home tonight, look in the mirror and see if you can feel proud of yourself for having stomped the life out of poor peasant people while you're allowing multi-millionaire drug dealers and pushers and financiers to eke the life out of the children of this community. I got a little cowardice when they started towards my car, and I drove away. I felt good, though. See, people who have power and don't have the grace or the civility to use that power to enhance human life become dangerous to the planet. Just like those policemen, our government is becoming dangerous to the planet. We kill, we destroy the hopes of the poor, we crush their flowers, their hopes, their dreams, and they feel good about it. You are exposing that contradiction. And they don't like to force their policies when it has been proven that we're not going to yield to their pressure. On the same day that you crossed or attempted to cross the border here between Maine and Canada, almost 100 people at the southern border, the Pastors for Peace caravan, approached the border. We were kind of hoping they would come. We wanted them to see and to try to confront. And they swallowed hard. They looked the other way and told us to go across the border. What's the difference? The difference is simply that over a 10-year period, Let Cuba Live, other counterparts to Let Cuba Live in other states and cities around the country, people from around the world, have consistently bombarded the border. We've challenged, we've faced their anger, we've been arrested, and we refuse to stop. We've had seizures, and we continue to put pressure on them until they've had to relinquish and give up that which they seize. They know that they cannot stop a people united because a people united can never be defeated. And I compliment Let Cuba Live, because what you have done is to make it clear on the northern border that you will not be stopped by their evil machinations, by their efforts to prevent normal relations, and you must continue this effort. You must not back down. You must go again to the border, and this time we'll bring people from around the country, and we'll go to the border with you, and we'll go in larger numbers. We face a special responsibility on our watch. All of us who are here, all of the organizations that are involved in this solidarity movement. The United States has as its ultimate objective the destruction of Cuba as it exists, a destruction of Cuba's commitment to socialism. It has as its ultimate objective the restoration of a puppet government in Cuba that will do the bidding of the United States. People like you and us, and of course, the noble, valiant people of Cuba, are what stand between our government and its ultimate objective. We are the barrier that prevents them from destroying the hopes and the dreams of the people of Cuba. That's our responsibility. I would imagine that some in Maine, like in every other state, may be wondering how much energy should we put into this. You may think these leadership folk and this crazy organization called Let Cuba Live, they're really carrying this a little too far. They're talking about going back again to the border. Well, that's exactly what you gotta do. That's exactly what I hope you will do. And I tell you that every one of us has a responsibility. No matter how young, no matter how old, no matter where you live in the state or the region or the nation, we have a responsibility. Let me press this upon you by pointing out that every one of us here is a direct beneficiary of the willingness of somebody else to struggle for our rights, to put themselves at serious disadvantage in order that we might have certain basic rights and exercise them. Those of us who have benefited from organized labor, we must know that organized labor did not achieve the right to represent labor, to bargain, to negotiate, because the bosses woke up one morning, having been converted overnight, and decided we're going to pay decent wages now. The only reason we have organized labor is because some people, some crazy folk like these Let Cuba Live coalition people, decided to fight the powers, decided to go to the barricades, decided to take matters in their own hands because the government officials and the corporate officials were hell-bent upon destroying the rights of the poor workers in this country. Lives were lost. But the victory was won. The victories that have been won in the area of organized labor have been won because somebody paid the price on our behalf. And we have to keep that struggle going. But it's true in other areas as well. People of color in this country did not wake up one morning and find that suddenly access to public accommodations, access to the voting booth, had been freely given because the racists decided they weren't going to be racist anymore. Like they went to church or something happened that they had a change of heart. No, we had some people who marched, who stood before the hoses, the horses, the dogs, the billy clubs, who were in prison, who engaged in civil disobedience, who said, I ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, who were determined to open the doors of schools and colleges and places of public accommodation. Lives were lost, the price was paid, and we are the beneficiaries of it. And since most of this congregation is white, lest you think you always were free, let me remind you that the landed gentry had the right to vote. But those of you who happen to be poor white folk didn't have many rights. And somebody had to fight against the landed gentry to open access to resources for white folk as well. So a natural question ought to be, if others fought to make this world, this place, a better place, how can I engage in that? Yeah. That's great. This issue of Cuba, the blockade against Cuba, is a responsibility of all of us on our watch. There are many issues to be fought. There are many injustices still to be tackled. But there is none more important than Cuba's right to live, to exist, and to exercise its sovereignty. Why is that so? Thank you. That's right. That's a nice touch. While there is no perfect nation in the world, there is none that come closer to it than Cuba. There was a time when I think some of us in the Cuba Solidarity Movement felt that we had to be on the defensive about Cuba. And others would say, there is no democracy in Cuba. And we would very softly respond to that. Well, some years ago, I had an insight that no longer would I be defensive about Cuba. For as I look at the electoral system in the United States and in all the rest of the world, I find none more democratic than the electoral system in Cuba. And therefore, I assert that Cuba leads the way in electoral human rights, in social and economic and cultural human rights, in every aspect that governance has responsibility to its people for. And therefore, we have a responsibility to defend it. We have a responsibility because it will help Cuba, but we have a responsibility also because in helping Cuba, we're helping the rest of the world. There is no nation that supports the aspirations and the hopes of the third world more than Cuba does. I meet more Africans on full free scholarship in Cuba than I have ever met or heard about in all of the United States. There are thousands of young people in the United States who dream, who aspire, who hope for the possibility of becoming medical doctors, but they cannot because of the cost. Medical education and education as a profession is big business. Cuba, less than a year ago, offered 500 full free scholarships to people of humble origin in the United States to go to Cuba and study medicine free for 6 years, with only commitment being that they return to the United States and serve the poor, humble communities that they came from. In issue after issue, in area after area, Cuba lights the way. Cuba has established the fact that it is the leader in the world community in the affirming of and guaranteeing the rights of the poor people of this world. And therefore, if we really want to see the world continue to have hope and possibility for the creation of a new society, we must support Cuba. There is no other nation that has demonstrated consistently a commitment to that objective. And that's why I like to say that, yes, Cuba needs us. And yes, we ought to respond to Cuba, because when Africa called, Cuba answered. Whenever there is need in the world, Cuba responds. But more than all of that, more than just because Cuba needs help, the world needs the example and the generosity and the spirit of enlightened democracy and socialism that Cuba represents. And so we must continue the struggle, and we must continue to up the ante. We must continue to keep pressure on the United States. We must continue to do the things that are right, knowing that the things that are right will embarrass our government because of its commitment to evil, because of its commitment to the destruction of the hopes of the poor. We must, like Walter Wink says, name the powers. And we must stand against the powers. And we must realize that in the course of doing that, we wrestle not just with flesh and blood, but with principalities and powers, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And we cannot be deterred because they say evil things about us, because they revile us, because they put us in jail. We must continue to march, to work, to struggle, to be in solidarity, no matter what obstacles they place in our way, because we are the future hope of the world.
Thank you, Reverend Walker. Let Cuba live! Let Cuba live! Let Cuba live! Let Cuba live! Amen.